Moaning my true love. Moaning my own love. Hark, shut your obstropolis. Flap, flap, blaze on. There she goes, brigade, bout ship, mount straightway. Cut up. Clap, tally ho, you're not come. Run, skelter race. Clap, Lynch, hey, sign on long of me. Denzel Lane this way. Change here for body else. We too, she said, will seek the kips where Shady Mary is. Righto, any old time. Light a bunter in Jubilee Bursuis. You coming along? Whisper, who the study hells the Johnny and the Black Duds? Hush, sinned against the night, and even now that day is at hand when he shall come to judge the world by fire. Flap. Ut implorentur scripturae, strike up a ballad. Then outspake Medical Dick to his comrade Medical Davy. Christigal, who's this excrement yellow gospeler on the Merion Hall? Elijah is coming, washed in the blood of the Lamb. Come on, you wine fizzling, gin sizzling, booze guzzling existences. Come on, you doggone bull-necked, beetle-browed, hog-jowl, peanut-brained, weaseloid, four-flushers, false alarms, and excess baggage. Come on, you triple X cycling infamy. Alexander J. Christ Dowie, that's yanked to glory. Most half this planet from Frisco Beach to Vladivostok. The deity ain't no nickel-dime bum show. I put it to you that he's on the square and a corking fine business proposition. He's the grandest thing yet, and don't you forget it. Shout salvation in King Jesus. You'll need to rise precious early, you sinner bear, if you want to diddle the Almighty God. Not half. He's got a cough mixture with a punch in it for you, my friend, in his back pocket. Just you try it on.
So here's the end of it. Yeah, they're being recorded, yeah. Okay. Your attention, outside. We're not that foolish Scottish, we are not that drunk. We had it before. And then the next thing, the Leith, and that's a county in Ireland, police dismisseth us, the Leith Solis. And you see, it's an echo, the Leith Solis echoes the Leith police. What the Leith police has to do, I don't know. But fortunately, the German translator, Goyert, asked Joyce, and Joyce told him, and so we now know, when you're drunk, and the police keep you, if you can say, and try to say, the Leith police dismisses us, you're not drunk. So it's a sobriety test. As you can see, all these sibilants, they're quite difficult to say. So that seems to be a thing. That is raised a translation problem, of course. Huh? You have to do something that's also difficult to say. I think in English, when you can say British Constitution, I think that's a thing. Anyway, the Leith Solis is an echo to me, whatever it means. It looks a bit like the last chalice. Werehawks for the chap puking. Obviously, somebody is puking, and they say, careful about that. He is unwell in his abominable regions. You realize he's unwell in his abdominal regions. Abominal for abdominal regions. Yucca, that's one thing. Night, Moan of My True Love is a song. Yuck, Moan of My Own Love. Ook, that's probably the vomiting. Then hark, listen, shut your obstropolis. Obviously, it means shut your mouth. Obstropolis is close to obstreperous or something like that. Flop, they sometimes left it out in the reading, seems to be the sound of the fire brigade, the bell or whatever it is, flop. Blaze on probably means there is a blaze, a fire on somewhere. There she goes, brigade. Outship, that's again a naval term, outship. Mount Street way, they're going in the direction of Mount Street. Cut up, plop, tally ho is from hunting. You not come, they ask, maybe Bloom. Run, skelter, race, plop. Now the last part, Lynch. Lynch is the one of the medical students, companion of Stephen. We hear a lot of him in the portrait. Sign on long a me, sign on like a ship. Denzil Lane, this way. They're going down Denzil Lane, it's a street name, to the... change here, somebody said, for Bawdy House. Bawdy, this is the red light district, the brothels, Bawdy House. We too, she said, will seek the clips where Shady Mary is. That is a poem by Rossetti, I believe. We too, she said, will seek the grove where Lady Mary is, but the kips is a word also for prostitute, for a brothel. Shade, Lady Mary becomes Shady Mary. Righto. Annual time. Somebody quotes from the Bible, Laeta Bunter in Jubilibus, they will enjoy themselves in their beds. Here, of course, related to the brothel in the beds. The Bible doesn't mean that. You come along, whisper, who the shooty hells? It's the Johnny in the Black Dirts. Somebody asked, whispering, who is the Johnny in the Black Dirts? And that is Broom. Most of them don't know him. And so they said, hush, sinned against the light. And even now the day is at hand when you shall come to judge the world by the fire. This must be Stephen saying, because in the morning in the school, DC, the employer who paid him, said the Jews sinned against the light. I don't know what sin against the light is, but that's what he said. And even that, and then he certainly was like, the day is at hand when he, that is then of course, that is, Jesus shall come to judge the world by fire. Fire with a fire brigade. Plop. Then more Latin, ut emperentur scripturae, that all occurs often in the Gospels, which means whatever they do is done to fulfill the scriptures of the Old Testament. So that... Then strike up a ballot, somebody else, and that must be Mulligan, because Mulligan wrote the poem about Deacon Davy. You may remember it at the end of the library scene, and here it's quoted. Then outspake Medical Dick to his comrade Medical Davy. These are two medical students. In a poem by Gogarty, their choice took. And it says, it's not really written here, but the poem says, one had a bloody big prick, and the other had plenty of gravy. One had a big organ, the other had more semen. So that is the, and as I said, you can visit Davy and Dick, which is now a part, the part, of the Cantor Hospital that goes that gives out to Plattenstrasse. So if you ever want, you can't go inside now, but a Swiss artist, Hannes Vogel, has constructed, for the hospital, of course, medical hospital, constructed this, taking these figures from Ulysses. So it's worth going, and you can even see the text of Ulysses in seven different languages. When it's open, you can go inside. Then, Christical, who is this excrement yellow gospeler on the Marian Hall? That says, Elijah is coming, washed in the blood of the Lamb. This is what he had at the beginning of chapter 8, the eating chapter, when Broom had a handbill that says, Elijah is coming. Elijah, a kind of forerunner of Jesus. I mean, that's the the reading of the Christians. They adopted the Old Testament because Elijah, they thought, was announcing, which I'm sure he didn't do in so many words, the birth of Christ. And this is an echo and a motive. And washed in the blood of the Lamb is that Protestant hymn. And now the end of it, from on, is somebody impersonating, I take it, an imaginary American evangelist, Dowie, who was supposed to come. To me, it doesn't seem very, very American, but it is. And so this is a hellfire preacher, and he would say this. Probably one of those imitates him or does it. Come on, you wine-fizzling, gin-sizzling, booze-guzzling existences. Come on, you doggone, bull-neck, beetle-browed, hog-jowled, peanut-brained, weasel-eyed, four-flushes, false alarm, and excess baggage. So it's all kinds of adjectives. And you're right, most of them are connected with animals. Animals are typical for the next chapter. So this is a you have dog, bull, beetle, hawk, weasel. I don't want to know what the four flushes, false alarm, and excess baggage. Just by the by, the chapter we're reading seems to have a lot of excess baggage too. Come on, you triple extract of infamy. Alexander J. Christ, the evangelist who existed and who, in the book, is coming to Dublin. That's yanked to glory most half this planet from Frisco Beach to Vladivostok. Clearly, it should be an American voice. The deity ain't no nickel-dime bum show, cheap carnival. And this is more or less what you'll get in the next chapter. I put it to you that he's on the square and a corking fine business proposition. Evangelists often ask for money, so it's also a business proposition. He's the grandest thing yet, and don't you forget it. Shout salvation in King Jesus. You'll need to rise precious early, you sinner there, if you want to diddle, to cheat the Almighty God. Then you hear the flop again. Not half. He's got a cuff mixture with a punch in it for you, my friend, in his back pocket. Just you try it on. And so the last voice, obviously an improvisation of what somebody might say, is American. And it may be no coincidence, as you know, the chapter has the development of the English language, and it might well be that Joyce foresaw that the future of English will be more in America than in the old land, that sort of thing. So this is then this long chapter that we managed to get through. But now it comes a bigger one even. It's called, in the Joycean schema, Circe or Circe in Homer was a sorceress, femme fatale. She could and did change men into swine and other animals. And of course, she has often been compared to a brothel where men also become kind of animals. And so here now that we are in the night district, Joyce calls it Night Town, which occupied a block of houses fairly shabby at the time, and it's no longer there because when Ireland became autonomous and the British soldiers left, the thing was, we don't need prostitution again, because the Irish wouldn't do that sort of thing anyway, and the soldiers have gone. And so they raised it. But it was quite fun. And it's interesting that Catholic Dublin had such a place that was obviously tolerated. So they were surveyed by the police and the soldiers. And this is now a chapter, the longest and one of the strangest that caught attention. Anyway, it's a play, it's in the form of a play, but you could not put it on the stage. It has been done, and it is wild. And here, as you will see, we don't quite know what is real and what is imagined. It has also the nature of a dream or a nightmare. And as I say, it's connected to Circe, who changed. When men came, they gave him something to eat, and then they changed him into swine and other things. So there's a lot of animal imagery here. You get a lot. And of course, in the traditional hierarchy, you would have the animals below, us in the middle, and the gods up on high. And here, there's a kind of mixture. The chapter, of course, also comes close to the new movement of psychoanalysis, which also, in a way, descended into the bottom of our unconscious and digs up all the thread, and it shows that we're all guilty and we're all criminal and pervert and all of this. Now, most epics, most great stories in the world have a descent into the underworld. You have it in Homer, of course. You have it in Dante. You have it in Christianity, Jesus Christ visiting hell for 3 times. And of course, you have it in psychoanalysis and all. So this is very close. It's also fairly close to the German expressionist drama. There was a lot of that going on. There's also a precedent, and that is Flaubert, wrote a play that is also for reading, not for say, The Temptation of Saint Anthony. So these are some of them. So it is the wildest, the most extreme thing. And of course, it wasn't quite palatable for readers of the time. So we just dive into it and begin. Yeah.
The Mappet Street entrance of Night Town, before which stretches an uncobbled tram siding, set with skeleton tracks, red and green will-o'-the-wisps, and danger signals. Rows of flimsy houses with gaping doors, rare lamps with faint rainbow fans. Round Rabiotti's halted ice gondola, stunted men and women squabble. They grab wafers between which are wedged lumps of cold and copper snow. Sucking, they scatter slowly. Children. The swan comb of the gondola, high-reared, forges on through the murk, white and blue under a lighthouse. Whistles call and answer. The calls.
Wait, my love, and I'll be with you.
The answers.
Round behind the stable.
A deaf-mute idiot with goggle eyes, his shapeless mouth dribbling, jerks past, shaken in St. Vitus dance. A chain of children's hands imprisons him. The children.
Kittog, salute.
The idiot lifts a palsied left arm and gurgles.
Crochet.
The children.
Where's the grace light?
The idiot gobbing.
Gagahas.
They release him. He jerks on. A pygmy woman swings on a rope slung between the railings, counting. A form sprawled against a dustbin and muffled by its arm and hat moves, groans, grinding, growling teeth, and snores again. On a step, a gnome, totting among a rubbish tip, crouches to shoulder a sack of rags and bones. A crone, standing by with a smoky oil lamp, rams the last bottle in the maw of his sack. He heaves his booty, tugs askew his peaked cap, and hobbles off mutely. The crone makes back for her lair, swaying her lamp. A bandy child, a squat on the doorstep with a paper shuttlecock, crawls sidling after her in spurts, clutches her skirt, scrambles up. A drunken navvy grips with both hands the railings of an area, lurching heavily. At a corner, 2 night watch in shoulder capes, the hands upon their staff holsters, loom tall. A plate crashes, A woman screams. A child wails. Oaths of a man roar, mutter, cease. Figures wander, lurk, peer from warrens. In a room lit by a candle stuck in a bottleneck, a slut combs out the tats from the hair of a scrofulous child. Sissy Caffrey's voice, still young, sings shrill from a lane. Sissy Caffrey.
I gave it to Molly because she was jolly, the leg of the duck, the leg of the duck.
Private Carr and Private Compton swagger sticks tighten their oxters as they march unsteadily, right about face, and burst together from their mouths a volleyed fart. Laughter of men from the lane. A hoarse virago retorts. The virago.
Signs on your hairy ass. More power, the Cavan girl.
Sissy Caffrey.
More luck to me, Cavan, Coothill and Bell Turpit,
she sings.
I gave it to Nelly to stick in her belly, the leg of the duck, the leg of the duck.
Good. So you see, an atmosphere is created, as in a film, something dark and ugly and repellent. So it's a lot of that. The Mappet Street, that was in Dublin, the Mappet Street entrance of Nighttown. Joyce called it Nighttown, it wasn't an official word. Before which stretches an uncobbled tram siding set with skeleton trucks, red and green will-o'-the-wisps. Will-o'-the-wisps are these things on swamps that these lights, Irrlichter, you have. By the way, in Goethe's Walpurgisnacht, which is a kind of forerunner of this, you also get will-o'-the-wisps. This. Red and green will-o'-the-wisps and danger signals. Rows of grimy, it should be grimy houses, not flimsy houses, with gaping doors, rare lamps with faint rainbow fans. Round Rabaiotis, we heard about Rabaiotis ice cream cart, halted ice gondola, stunted man and woman squabble. Stunted is kind of typical, right? Everything is interrupted movement, nothing is free, a kind of cramped thing, stunted. They grab wafers between which are wedged lumps of coral and copper snow. Coral and copper, not coal and copper. Sucking, they scatter slowly, children. A lot of children around it. Mm-hmm. The swan comb of the gondola, again swan animal, high-reared, forges on through the murk, white and blue under a lighthouse. Whistles call and answer. So you see, it's a sort of creepy sort of scenery. You can imagine this done in a movie. Then you have called, wake my love and I'll be with you. If you remember, and also if you don't remember, on the first page, you have already whistled, called and whistles. So there's a kind of similarity to the opening of the book. The answers round behind the stable. Then a deaf-mute idiot with goggle eyes, his shapeless mouth dribbling, jerks. This kind of stunted movement, shaken in St. Vitus stance, St. Vitus, fight stance, when you're possessed by something. A chain of children's hand imprisons him. The children, Kithog, which is a kind of Irish word that Joyce didn't quite know. I always have to look it up, what it's supposed to mean. A left-handed person. By the way, there's another thing. A lot in this chapter is left-handed, as you know, in the traditional thing. The right hand is the right, and left is always something which is strange. Interestingly enough, in European languages, the word for right is always the same etymologically, but the sense for the left is always a bit sort of left-handed, linkish, gauche, sinister. All of these words have bad connotation. And so this whole chapter is a bit left-handed according to the convention. The idiot lifts a palsied, paralyzed, left arm and gurgles. Grahut is probably echoing salute. The children, where's the great light? And the idiot says, Gargagest, obviously the greatest light he tries to imitate. Lots of distortions. They release him. In contrast to the end of the last chapter, where we had just what is being said, we didn't know who says it, and we didn't know how they say it. And here, that is clarified. You always have the speakers in big letters, in capital letters. You have the stage direction in parentheses, in italics, and they get out of hand. And you have what is spoken. So that at least is clear, whatever else is not. My own take on this is also that Joyce, who, as you know, had a whole chapter about Shakespeare in theory, that Joyce also wanted to out-Shakespeare by having plays with more action, more murders, more people than all of us, as something. They release him. He jerks on. Jerk, often the movement is like that. A pygmy, small woman, swings on a rope, slung between the railings, counting, a form sprawled against a dustbin, and muffled by its arm and hat, moves, groans, grinding, growling teeth, and snores again. On a step, a gnome, no more these nightly creatures, totting among a rubbish tip, crouches to shoulder a sack of rags and bones. This particular description reminds me of Hogarth, you know, these drawings that he has, or all the kind of love. A crone standing with a smoky oil lamp rams the last bottle into the maw, his sack, maw would be the stomach. He heaves his body, tucks askew his peaked cap, and hobbles off mutely. The crone makes back for her lair. Lair is where animals sleep, swaying her lamp. A bandy child is bandy-legged, a squat on the doorstep with a paper shuttlecock, crawls sidling after her in spurts, clutches her shirt, scrambles up. See, all a little bit of underdeveloped. A drunken navvy worker with both hands, grips with both hands the railings of an area, lurching heavily. You see, all movement is somehow impeded. At a corner, two night watch soldiers in shoulder caps, their hands upon their staff holsters, loom tall. There was always police in the area. A plate crashes, a woman screams, a child wails. Oath of man, roar, mutter, cease. Figures warn the lurk, peer from warrens. Warrens is also where animals are. In a room lit by a candle stuck in a bottleneck, a slut combs out the tats from the hair of a scrofulous child. Tats is these things in the hair. So this is the setting, the mood and all of it, and it's very, very stark and all of it. And then suddenly we have Cissy Caffrey's voice, still young, sings for a lady. Now, Cissy Caffrey, we'll probably remember, in the Nausicaa chapter, the 13th, there was Gertie McDowell and Cissy Caffrey. She was the forward girl, a bit like a boy, and you wonder, is she there in Night Town? Is she perhaps doing something else than whatever she's doing? So again, we don't quite know if she's there. It's up for us to decide whether it's reality or some kind of imagination. And Sissy Caffrey sings a song that doesn't seem to be quite decent. I gave it to Molly because she was jolly, the leg of the duck, the leg of the duck. Molly is, of course, not the Molly we know, the song, Molly Jolly Duck. You almost guess or figure out there must be a line rhyming with duck somewhere. And then we have two new characters, Private Carr and Private Compton, Swaggersticks. English officers often had a stick under them, it's called a swagger stick. Tight in their oxters. Oxter is the ash pit, under the arms, I forget that. Oxter. As they march unsteadily, right about face, that's a military command, and bust together from their mouth a wallet fart. So this is very obscene and things like laugh the men from the lane, a hoarse virago retort. A virago is a man, vir is man, and the virago is a woman who looks like a man. It's not a compliment. But I know that some early feminist authors combined and called it the virago press, taking up a slur and using it for their own. Now, Private Carr and Private Compton are English soldiers. Carr is related to Zurich because when in Zurich, and Joyce performed, they performed a play, also a play, The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. And Joyce was the business manager and Carr was an employee from the consulate who played a Wildean dandy, and he bought some clothes. He must be well-dressed for a dandy. And they argued about the money, and it seems that Carr insulted and threatened Joyce, and they had a fallout. And Joyce went to the Zurich Bezirksgericht to sue Carr, and the value was about 30 francs and a pair of trousers. There was a trial once and it ended, and by the time it was over, Carr had left and gone. But Joyce was unforgiving, and he did what he has done before. He gave his certain bad characters, he gave them names. So this is the name of a real person. Some of you may have heard or even seen the play by Stoppard, Travesties. Stoppard is very good at getting minor figures on a stage. Rosen and Giddens from Hamlet, and he plays Travesties that takes place in the Zurich Central Library with Joyce, with Carr, with Lenin, and with Chara, the Dadaist. It's quite a funny play. Anyway, so this is Private Carr, and he is now an English soldier here. And then the virago says, signs your new hairy ass, more power the Karen girl. Signs on you is probably bad luck on you, hairy ass. Don't like the soldiers. More power to Cavan girl. Cavan is a county in Ireland. I don't know what is special about Cavan. I haven't figured it out. And Sissy Caffrey says, more luck to me. Sign on you is bad luck. And Cavan, Cootill, and she sings. These are places, Cootill and Burpham, in Cavan. I don't know what is behind what Cavan is known for anything. And then she sings, I gave it to Nelly to stick in her belly, the leg of the duck, the leg of the duck. Again, duck, animals and things like that, something coarse and an indecent song, no doubt. So things here are very strange, and we must be prepared for almost anything. Yep, now it goes on.
Private Carr and Private Compton turn and counter retort. their tunics blood bright in a lamp glow, black sockets of caps on their blonde copper polls. Stephen Dedalus and Lynch pass through the crowd, close to the redcoats. Private Compton jerks his finger.
Way for the parson.
Private Carr turns and calls.
What up, parson?
Sissy Caffrey, her voice soaring higher.
She hasn't she got it whenever she put it the leg of the dock.
Stephen, flourishing the ash plant in his left hand, chants with joy the introit for Paschal time. Lynch, his jockey cap low on his brow, attends him, a sneer of discontent wrinkling his face. Stephen.
Vidi aquam agredientem de templo alatere dextro, alleluia.
The famished snaggle tusks of an elderly board protrude from a doorway. The board, her voice whispering huskily.
Psst, come here till I tell you. Maidenhead inside. Psst.
Stephen, altius aliquantium.
Et omnes et quos pervenit aqua ista.
The board spits in their trail, her jet of venom.
Trinity Medicals, fallopian tube, all prick and no pence.
Okay. Private Carr turn and counter retort. Their tunics, blood bright in a lamp glow, this very filmic. Black sockets of caps on their blonde copper poles, but for head. Steve, and now I have Stephen Dedalus. We know they wanted to go and Lynch. Pass through the crowd close to the redcoats. Redcoats are British soldiers. They were obviously dressed in red when they went out. Private Compton jerks his finger. Way for the parson. Stephen, in black clothes, has been taken for a parson a long time. Sissy Caffrey, a voice sorry higher, she has it, she got it wherever she put it, the leg of the duck. And now we get almost a return to the opening of the book. Remember when Buck Mulligan was acting out the words of the Mass. And Stephen seems to do the same thing here. Stephen, flourishing the ashplant in his left hand, chants with joy the introit for Paschal time, for Easter time, that is part of the Roman Catholic Mass. Lynch, his jockey cap, low on his brow, attends him, a sneer of discontent wrinkling his face. And what does Stephen say? Vidi aquam agredientem de templo alatere dextro, alleluia. Buck Mulligan had said, intro ibo ad altare Dei, enter the day, and in the same ritual at the beginning, said, I have seen the water coming out of the right, from the right side, hallelujah. So he's also singing something in. I don't think that is customary when men visit the brothels. You don't sing Catholic songs. But you realize here that religion, Catholicism, and prostitution, the opposite, are close together. Then the famished snaggle tusks of an elderly board protrude from a boy. The board, her voice whispering huskily. Psst, come here, and I'll tell you. Maidenhead inside, selling, procuring, virgin. A board procures the women. Then Stephen back. Altius aliquantum, that's in a higher kind of voice. Et omnes et quos pervenit aqua, and all at whom comes this water. So it has to, the opening of the one could go into it, which I won't. It doesn't help too much. The board spits in their trail her jet of venom. Trinity Medicals. Medical students from Trinity, the university, it seems sometimes came maybe to give a bit of advice or maybe to get a free ride or whatever is Trinity. Fallopian tube. The fallopian tube is a, wait a moment, I don't even know. It's something that I think combines the urinary system and things like that. And then all prick and no pence. They're all prick, cock, and no pence. They want something and have no money. But it seems it was customary. And then you get... Oh, we stopped here, yeah. I think we got...
Edie Boardman, sniffling, crouched with Bertha Supple, draws a shawl across her nostrils. Edie Boardman, bickering.
And says the one, a senior of Faithful Place, which a square pusher, the greaser off the railway in his come-to-bed hat. Did you, says I? That's not for you to say, says I. You never seen me in the man trap with a married Highlander, says I. The likes of her, stag that one is, stubborn as a mule, and her walking with two fellas the one time, Kilbride the engine driver and Lance Corporal Oliphant.
Stephen, triumph halliter.
Salvi facti sunt.
He flourishes his ash plant, shivering the lamp image, shattering light over the world. A liver and white spaniel on the prowl slinks after him, growling. Lynch scares it with a kick. Lynch, so that? Stephen looks behind.
So that gesture, not music, not odours, would be a universal language, the gift of tongues, rendering visible not the lay senses, but the first entelechy, the structural rhythm.
Lynch, pornosophical philotheology, metaphysics in Mecklenburg Street. Stephen, we have shrew-ridden Shakespeare and henpecked Socrates. Even the all-wisest staggy right was bitted, bridled, and mounted by a light of love.
Lynch, bah.
Stephen, anyway, who wants two gestures to illustrate a loaf and a jug? This movement illustrates the loaf and jug of bread and wine in Omar. Hold my stick.
Lynch, damn your yellow stick. Where are we going?
Yep. Good. Then we have Edie Boardman. Now, remember in the Nausicaa chapter, we had Cissy Caffrey and we had Edie Boardman. Now, Edie Boardman was always a bit squinty, a bit distant. She felt she was something better. Is it likely that she would be in there, maybe a prostitute? It's quite interesting. I remember long ago, there are two scholars. One said, Cissy Caffrey and later Gertie Whittall and Edie Boardman, these girls, they are also prostitutes. Another one said, Cissy Caffrey cannot be there, so we cannot take it at face value. And one of the problems here is what is real and what is imagined. It was an early German dissertation where somebody tried to find out. And it isn't quite possible. We don't always know. So the imagined mixes with reality, and we can't really tell from one to the other. So I can't imagine that Edie Boardman, a bit stiff and all of that, would be. And look at how she talks. Edie Boardman, sniffling, crouched with Bertha Supple. Bertha Supple is somebody that Gertie McDowell mentions. Another friend of them, but she doesn't turn up. Draws her shawl across her nostrils. Edie Boardman, bickering. And the kind of vulgar language it is. And say the one, I seen you up Faithful Place with your square pusher. A square pusher is a... It's something for I couldn't quite tell, but it's nothing great. A greaser off the railway, somebody works with, with his come to bed hat. Did you say I? That's not for you to say, says I. You never seen me in the man trap with a married Highlander, says I. It's like prostitutes talking to each other. The likes of her. Stark, that one is. Stark is a. An informer. There's a lot of slang here. Stubborn as a mule. Mule don't have offspring. And her walking with two fellows at the same. Kilbride, the engineer, and Lance Corporal Oliphant. So this is kind of prostitute's talk. Yeah, and did we read that? Yes, huh? I have to. Stephen, triumphale triumphu, salvi facti isum, they have been saved, the souls. Then he flourishes his ash plant, shivering the lamp image. Now, very early in the second chapter, Stephen thought of a final end scene. Masonry and falling and all of that. So some a kind of shivering, some the lamp image, shattering light all over the world. A liver and white spaniel, a dog, on the prowl, slinks after him, growling. So there's a dog. Lynch scares it with a kick. So that. Now, Stephen is not only theological, he's also philosophical. So that gesture, not music, not odors, would be a universal language. It's kind of the philosophy of language. Does gesture start? Is it sound? Is it odor? How is language start? The gift of tongues, the gift of tongues is what happened at Whitsuntide, Pinkston, in the Gospel, where the disciples were inspired by the Holy Ghost and started to speak in strange languages. That can be applied a little bit to the previous chapter, where you have all kinds of things. The gift of tongues, they spoke in strange way. Nobody understood it except themselves. Good for this chapter. Rendering visible not the lay sense, but the first entelogy, the structural rhythm. Now, he has used the word entelogy already in the library chapter. Now, entelogy is a Greek word. It means something has a goal, telos. I have no idea, I haven't found out what exactly it means, what Stephen means by it. And an Irish professor who wrote the book about Aristotle talks about it, but doesn't tell me what it means here. So we can sort of put it aside. I do it in, despair. He's talking strange things, as he's been done before. I don't think most men, when they come to a brothel, speak Latin and talk philosophy. Lynch makes fun of it. Pornosophical philotheology. Philosophy and pornography. Pornography means literally the writing of prostitutes. And this chapter is pornography also in the literal sense. We will find prostitutes, and they're described, but it's also, of course, sexual content. Metaphysics in Mecklenburg Street. Mecklenburg Street is in that area. And then, Stephen, we have shrew-ridden Shakespeare. Remember that in the library chapter, he said, Shakespeare married Anne Hathaway, and she was a shrew, like the taming of the shrew. The shrew is a haranguing woman and wife, like Socrates. And henpecked, that's when the woman takes the lead, Socrates. Socrates was married to Xantippe, who was a nuisance. So he talks about that. To Lynch. Irrespective, Lynch wasn't in the library, irrespective of the ideas that follow. Even the all-wise Stagirite, that was a convention in antiquity that you called by somebody by where he's from. And Aristotle was from Stagira, so he's referred to as the Stagirite. But again, not everybody is wise. Was bitted, bridled, and mounted by a light of love. And there is a story that clever Socrates was in a way dominated by a woman. She sat on him, riding on him, and was bitten like a horse and mounted by a light of love. So that is traditional. So, Lynch says, bah. Stephen. And now he gets even more involved. Anyway, who wants two gestures, gesture and language are combined, to illustrate a loaf and a jerk? This movement illustrates a loaf and jerk of bread and wine in Omar. Hold my stick. Now, what Stephen refers to is Omar Khayyam. That was a long poem in the middle of the 19th century about the Orient, the Persian stuff and all of this. Lots of quotations are taken from there. And there's one passage with a loaf and a jerk, and a gesture is done and is described. And then he gives a stick to Lynch to do it. Lynch, damn your yellow stick. Lynch swears in yellow. Where are you going? Stephen, lecherous lynx. So Lynch becomes a lynx, that animal. Tu la belle dame sans merci. And you know this is a poem by Shelley, I believe. Or Keats, La Belle Dame sans merci, that is the femme fatale, the woman who is attractive but dangerous. And here in this chapter, you have women as seductresses. Georgina Johnson, he's going for. And then he says, Ad deam qui letificat juventutem meam. This is quite complex. Buck Mulligan in the morning said, aloud and alone, Intro ibo ad altare Dei, ad Deum, to the God who gladdens my youth, the God that gladdens my youth. And Stephen here uses the same thing, but refers to a prostitute, not ad Deum, the God, but at the woman who gladdens my youth. So it's of course really blasphemous when God is replaced by a prostitute gladdening, and a different kind of gladdening. By the way, Letificat is at the end of the previous chapter too. Then Stephen thrusts Jasper on him and slowly holds out his hands, his head going back till both hands are spanned from his breast, downturn in planes of intersecting, the fingers are at the part, the left being higher. I once saw a person do it, so it must be a gesture from that fake Persian poem. I can't do it, but it's something complicated.
Sorry, we haven't read that.
Which is the jug of bread? It skills not, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That or the custom house. Custom house is nearby. Don't know what he means by it. Illustrate thou. It is, here, take your crutch and walk. He gives back the asphalt. But of course, take your crutch and walk is what Jesus said to the lame man that he healed. So you see, full of biblical and other echoes. But once more, I don't really know what on earth Stephen is trying to put across.
Sorry, Fritz, we haven't read that yet.
Did we
stop
here?
We stopped, yeah, just before.
We arranged it, and I always forget a little bit. Anyway, okay. We stopped.
Okay.
Stephen, lecherous lynx to La Belle Dame sans Merci, Georgina Johnson, a dame qui letificat juventutem meam.
Oh.
Stephen thrusts the ash plant on him and slowly holds out his hands, his head going back till both hands are a span from his breast, downturned in planes intersecting. The fingers about to part, the left being higher. Lynch, which is the jug of bread? It skills not. That or the custom house. Illustrate thou. Here, take your crutch and walk. They pass. Tommy Caffrey scrambles to a gas lamp and clasping climbs in spasms. From the top spur, he slides down. Jackie Caffrey clasps to climb. The navvy lurches against the lamp. The twins scuttle off in the dark. The navvy, swaying, presses a forefinger against a wing of his nose and ejects from the farther nostril a long liquid jet of snot. Shouldering the lamp, he staggers away through the crowd with his flaring cresset. Snakes of river fog creep slowly. From drains, clefts, cesspools, middens, arise on all sides stagnant fumes. A glow leaps on the south beyond the seaward reaches of the river. The navvy, staggering forward, cleaves the crowd and lurches towards the tram siding. On the farther side, under the railway bridge, Bloom appears, flushed, panting, cramming bread and chocolate into a side pocket. From Gillen's hairdresser's window, a composite portrait shows him gallant Nelson's image. A concave mirror at the side presents to him lovelorn, long-lost, lugubru Baloo-whom. Grave Gladstone sees him level, Bloom for Bloom. He passes, struck by the stare of truculent Wellington. But in the convex mirror, grin unstruck, the bonham eyes and fat chop cheek chops of Jolly Poldy, the Rickstick Stoldy. At Antonio Rabiotti's door, Bloom halts, sweated under the bright arc lamps. He disappears. In a moment, he reappears and hurries on.
Oh, good. I read ahead before that. Anyone, they pass. Now we have Tommy Caffrey, scrambled to a car. Now, Tommy is and Caffrey are the brothers of Sissy Caffrey. Now, it is very unlikely that these children would be allowed in the night town. It would be very strange. So, for my money, I would say they're probably not there. They're just imagined. Who imagines it? Bloom hasn't been on so far. Somehow the book seems to imagine it. It's very strange to say. Clamped to a gas lamp and clasping claims in spasms. The whole chapter has spasmodic movement, things like that. From the top spur, he slides down. Jackie Caffrey, the other twin, clasps to climb. Then Nari lurches against the lamp. The twins scuttle off in the dark. The navvy swaying. And here I get a very attractive scene. Presses a forefinger against the wing of his nose and ejects from the farther nostril a long liquid jet of snot. Not particularly attractive here, but that's a characteristic of the chapter. Maybe the first chapter, MacMullin called the handkerchief snot green. So often chapter beginnings have a kind of relation, possible. So, shouldering the lamp, obviously you can't shoulder a lamp and walk away with it. He staggers away through the crowd with his flaring crescent. Snakes of river frog creep slowly, animal. From drains, clefts, cesspools, middens arise on all sides, stagnant fumes. A glow leaps in the south beyond the seaward reaches of the river. That's probably that fire that broke out somewhere. The navvy, staggering forward, cleaves the crowd and lurches towards the dram siding. On the farther side, under the railway bridge, Bloom appears. And now Bloom is coming here. Appears flushed, panting, cramming bread and chocolate into a side pocket. Obviously, he also bought some more bread and some chocolate in his side pocket. His pockets, Bloom's pockets are pretty full, you realize, with the soap and the potato and everything. From Dylan's hairdresser's window, there's a hairdresser there, and for some reason, hairdressers in the English-speaking countries, not the state, often have flags in their window, seem to be more patriotic than others. And here, Dylan's hairdresser's window, a composite portrait shows him gallant Nelson's image. Nelson, the winner of Trafalgar. A concave mirror, that is a mirror that distorts at the side, presents to him love, lore, long lost, lugu, bru, bu, lu, hum. So the mirror elongates him, he becomes long, he's distorted, long, becomes lugu, hum. Grave Gladstone, another English politician, sees him level, broom for broom. He passes, struck by the stare of truculent Wellington, but in the convex mirror, that's the opposite mirror, green, unstruck the bonham eyes and fat cheek chops of Jolly Poldy the Rickstick Stoldy, so he's short and round. One mirror elongates him, the other. So these are distorting mirrors, and this is a chapter of distortions, I think. This, in a way, visually prepares us for all the things to come, strange things to come. And then we have still the Rabbi Otis ice cream gondola at Antonius Bloom Halls, sweated under the bright arc lamp. He disappears. In a moment, he reappears and hurries on. Now,
Bloom, fish and taters, NG. He disappears into Olhausen's, the pork butcher's, under the downcoming roll shutter. A few moments later, he emerges from under the shutter, puffing Poldy, blowing Blue Hoom. In each hand, he holds a parcel, one containing a lukewarm pig's crubeen, the other a cold sheep's trotter, sprinkled with whole pepper. He gasps, standing upright. Then, bending to one side, he presses the parcel against his rib and groans. Bloom, stitch in my side. Why did I run? He takes breath with care and goes forward slowly towards the lamp-set siding. The glow leaps again. Bloom, what is that, a flasher? Searchlight. He stands at Cormac's corner, watching. Bloom, Aurora Borealis, or a steel foundry? Ah, the brigade, of course. South side, anyhow. Big blaze. Might be his house, Beggar's Bush. We're safe. He hums cheerfully. London's burning, on fire." He catches sight of the navvy lurching through the crowd at the farther side of Talbot Street. "I'll miss him. Run, quick, better cross here." He darts to cross the road. Urchins shout. The urchins,
"Mind out, mister!"
Two cyclists with lighted paper lanterns aswing swim by him, grazing him, their bells rattling. The bells,
"Halty, halty, halty, all!"
Bloom halts erect, stung by a spasm. "Ow!" He looks round, darts forward suddenly. Through rising fog, a dragon sandstrower, travelling at caution, slews heavily down upon him, its huge red headlight winking, its trolley hissing on the wire. The motorman bangs his foot gong. The gong,
bang, bang, black, black, blood, bog, blue.
The brake cracks violently. Bloom, raising a policeman's white-gloved hand, blunders, stiff-legged, out of the track. The motorman, thrown forward, pug-nosed on the guide wheel, yells as he slides past over chains and keys. The motorman,
"Hey, shit breeches, are you doing the hat trick?"
Bloom. Bloom, trick leaps to the curbstone and halts again. He brushes a mud flake from his cheek with a parceled hand.
Okay. Now, Bloom, that's reality for a moment. Fish and taters, fish and potato, fish and chips. No good. Oh. He disappears into Olhausen, that is a butcher. I was quite thrilled when I discovered there's still a shop called Olhausen there. The pork butcher. So Bloom begins his day with the pork butcher. And here again, under the downcoming roll shutter. A few moments later, he emerges from under the shutter, puffing Poldy, blowing Blue Hoom, again distorted. In each hand, he holds a parcel, one containing a lukewarm pig's crubeen, that's a pig's foot, and the other a cold sheep's trotter, that's also a sheep's foot. So he buys some meat, a pig, and the sheep trotter sprinkled with whole pepper. So he has bought quite a lot to eat now, chocolate, and now he gasps, standing upright. Then, bending to one side, he presses a parcel against his rib and groans, "Stitch in my side." Well, we know that when you're on, you get the stitch. This chapter is full of such things that affect the body and doesn't make it smooth and active. Why did I run? He takes breath with care and goes forward slowly towards the lampshade siding. The glow leaps again. What is it? A flasher? A searchlight from a light tower? Searchlight? He stands at Cormac's corner watching. You see, you could follow where he is on a map. Aurora Borealis, that is some light that you see. Or a steel foundry, there may be that. The brigade, of course. Now he remembers there was a fire brigade. Southside, anyhow, big blaze. Might be his house. Whose house? Big blaze. Blaze is boiling, perhaps, he thinks. His house. Beggar's Bush. That is an area of Dublin. That is a place. We're safe. He hums cheerfully. London's burning, on fire, that's a song. He catches sight of the navvy lurching through the crowd at the farther side of Talbot Street. I'll miss him. Miss whom? Well, we later find out he is following Stephen. He has lost him and hopes to see him. Run, quick, better cross here. He darts to cross the road. Urchins, shouted young. The urchin, mind out, mister. Two cyclists with lighted paper lanterns swing. Of course, if you have a bicycle at night, it has to be lighted. Primitive, it was carbide at the time. Swim by him, grazing him, the bells rattling. And the bells say, halt, y'all. Bloom, halt. Eyes erect, stung by a spasm. Again, there's another spasm. Ow! He looks round artful suddenly. Through rising fog, a dragon sands through her. Again, dragon. Probably light. Travelling at caution, probably slowly. Slews heavily down upon him, its huge red headlights winking, its trolley hissing on the wire. The motorman bangs his foot gong. And the gong says, bang, 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 and says, bloody bugger Bloom, or something like that. He may say that, or Bloom may imagine it. The brake cracks heavily. Bloom, raising a policeman's white-gloved hand, it isn't that he has a glove, but it is like a white-gloved hand, blunders stiff-legged out of the track. The motorman thrown forward, pug-nosed on the guide wheel, yells as he slides past over change of heat. So there's a near collision. And the motorman says, hey, shit breeches, are you doing the hat trick? Now, hat trick is a strange word here. We know what hat trick means in sport. But before that, it must, we don't quite know. What it is, I've heard stories of somebody sitting on the street and covering with a hat or something like that. Anyway, it's nothing very decent. Bloom, trick leaps to the curbstone and halts again. He brushes a mud flake from his cheek with a parcel hand. No thoroughfare. Close, safe, that, but cure the sitch. Must take up Sandow's exercises again. From time to time, Bloom thought of Sandow, and you might remember Sandow was the first bodybuilder, a German, very strong, who turned up in circuses and was a thing. And he was also marketing his skills, and he became a kind of trademark. And of course, you could make gymnastic push-ups and things like that. Must take up Sandow exercise again. On the hands, down. Mm-hmm. Insure again, street accident too. The providential, that would be an insurance. Providential is when you look ahead. And here Bloom did not do it.
Sorry, Fritz, shall we read that first?
Poor Mama's panacea. So the potato is now... something from his mother, but a kind of a charm or something like that. It seems to be, was thought to be a cure for rheumatism. As you know, potatoes are nightshades and they seem to have particular property. Of course, in Ireland, potato would inevitably also call up the famine when the potato crop failed. Heel easily catching the tracks or bootlegs in the cork, the kind of thing that can happen to you. Day the wheel of the Black Maria peeled off my shoe again its corner. That was Black Maria is the prison car. Third time is the charm. Shoe trick. I think shoe trick matches hat trick. Whatever hat trick is, it's the opposite of a shoe trick. Insolent driver. I ought to report him. Tension makes them nervous. Might be the fellow that parked me this morning with that horsey woman when Bloom in the fifth chapter wanted to look across the street at the woman getting up on a carriage to see her legs. A tram driver, pug-nosed, came in between, and Bloom thinks it's the same type of thing. Same style of beauty. Think of him all the same. The stiff walk. The stiff walk means you walk stiffly. But interestingly enough, you could also read it, the stiff, the dead, those are stiff, walk. And they do it in this chapter. And they do it in Homer, in Hades and all of that. But of course, the main thing is the walk is stiff. True words spoken in jest. That awful cramp in Lad Lane, he had the cramp once. Something poisonous, I eat. Typical Bloom, he always attributes things to eating. I ate. Emblem of luck. Why? Probably lost cattle. I don't know what that means. Emblem of luck, lost cattle. I can't tell you what that is. Mark of the beast. The mark of the beast is in the Bible. And it is the number 666 that is unlucky. Wait a moment. And the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast is the number 666, something unlucky in the Bible. Luck. Is it, or the lack of luck is, of course, something here. Did you read that far, or?
No, we're,
or shall I go on?
At the beginning of this paragraph, we stopped. So now we.
Anyway,
I try to.
The sinister figure leans on plaited legs against a bird's wall. This is unknown. Injected with dark mercury. Mercury was used against syphilis, and syphilis was quite prevalent. And if you went to these houses, chances are you might get it. There is at least one choice scholar in Trieste who claims and has been, that Joyce also may have suffered from syphilis with many consequences. It was the disease to have at the time. From under a mild, wily sombrero, the figure regards him with evil eye. You know, the evil eye is a charm that stops you or lames you or something like that. Bloom. Because the sombrero says, Buenas noches, señorita Blanca. Gregala Esther, what street is this? For some reason, because of the sombrero, he knows a little bit of Spanish. The figure, impassive, raises a signal arm, password, as you know. Passwords were really centrist. You couldn't enter without saying the password. Shrine Mappet, and that means Mappet Street. That is the place. And Bloom, ha-ha, mercy. Esperanto. Esperanto, the artificial language that looks very close to Spanish. Slan Leith is Irish. Forget again what it is. Safe. It's safe with you. It's okay. He mutters. Gaelic spy sent by that fire eater. It may be a spy of the Gaelic League, the Irish rebels, sent by that fire eater. By the fire eater, he means the Cyclops, the citizen in Cyclops. He steps forward. A sack shows that Ragman bars his path. He steps left. Ragman left. I beg. He swerves, silent, step aside, slips past and on. You know, there's this encounter. Both first go to one side, then the other. It's all a difficult movement. Boom, keep to the right, right, right. Must be a song. If there's a finger post planted by the touring club at Step Aside is outside of Dublin, and there was a touring club, probably for bicycle tours and things like that. Step Aside, who procured that public boon? I, who lost my way, have contributed the columns of the Irish Cyclist, the letterhead in darkness. So Boone must have had a near encounter with the cycle and wrote in darker Step Aside. Keep to the right. Rags and Bones. The Rags and Bones man is the one who collects rags and bottles and things like that. A fence, more likely. A fence is a pimp. Oh no, a fence is somebody who receives stolen goods. More likely. First place murderer makes for. Wash off his sins of the world. But now I think we should have a bit of reading if you can manage it.
Okay, let's see.
If not, I go on then.
Password.
We didn't arrange an hour before to read. So,
yes. Problem.
Jackie Caffrey, hunted by Tommy Caffrey, runs full tilt against Blue. These children who are most likely not there. Blue, oh. Shocked on weak hams, legs, he halts. Tommy and Jackie vanish there, here. Bloom pats with parceled hands, watch, fob pocket, book pocket, purse pocket, sweets of sin, potato, soap. These are all the pockets with the things in them. Because of near color, you see if nothing has been stolen. So you can see you have a summary of what's in his. He has a watch, pocket, book pocket, purse pocket. Sweet of sin. Beware of pickpockets. Old thieves dodge, trick. Collide, then snatch your purse. The retriever approaches, sniffling, nose to the ground. You know, a retriever is a dog. Now, the first dog was, I forget, and there will be more dogs coming. It seems to be that one dog is following Bloom, but the dog changes its race or whatever it is. If you were in the foundation, you would see we have, Ursula has collected all the dogs that are named. There are about 12 or 15.
15, yeah.
As I say, probably the same dog, but with a different appearance. Mm-hmm. This chapter is also like, these stage things where actors change clothes and behind the pillow they come out differently. And here the dog does that kind of thing. It's here a retriever. Approaches sniffling, nose to the ground. A sprawled form sneezes. A stooped, bearded figure appears, garbed in the long kaftan of an elderly giant. The elders of Zion were big, and they were also part of those prejudices against Jews. They did all kinds of evil things, and there had been a constant threat what they did. And that was actually taken over by these pogroms, and even then by the Nazis later on. Elder in Zion, and smoking cap with magenta tassels. Horn spectacles. We may remember, perhaps, Bloom's Jewish father had horn spectacles. Hang down the wings of the nose. Yellow poison streaks. And we know that Bloom's father kills himself by poison, and he had yellow streaks. So that echoes the father on the drawn face. And then Rudolf. So this now is Bloom's father, Rudolf, who appears. And so you see here, that is imagination. That's like a dream. So obviously Bloom's dead father is not there. Children think maybe there or not. And he says, second half crown, waste money today. He got some more food. I told you not go with drunken goy ever. Goys are non-Jews. So you catch no money. And you see his language is a little bit more German or Yiddish than English. Bloom hides the crubeen and throttle behind his back, and crestfallen feels warm and cold, feet meet. Ja, ich weiß, Papachi. So he goes into German. Bloom's father must have known German. That would be the language in Hungary. That is the connection to the world. And he says, Papachi, ich weiß. Even Bloom knows that much. Rudolf, what you making down this place? And you see, that is German. What you making down this place? Have you no soul? With feeble vulture jaws, talons. So here's a vulture. He feels the silent face of Bloom. Now you know that in the Old Testament, blind Abraham feels the skin of his sons too. Are you not my son Leopold, the grandson of Leopold? Are you not my dear son Leopold, who left the house of his father and left the God of his father, Abraham and Jacob? So this refers to the Old Testament, but it also refers us to the play that Bloom saw announced, Leah, by an Austrian author, where there is a Jewish colony, and they also have Old Testament names. All a bit complicated, though. Bloom with the caution. I suppose your father, Mosenthal, that all that's left of him. Mosenthal was a rich Jewish philanthropist who gave a lot of money. All that's left of him. Rudolf, severely. One night they bring you home drunk as dog after spend your good money. So the father tells him to be careful. What do you call them running chaps? Don't know. Bloom. And now you see, this is also a costume change type of thing. A new smart blue Oxford suit with white vest slips, narrow shoulders, and brown alpine hat, wearing gents sterling silver, wearing Waterbury keyless watch and double curb Albert with seal attached, once under him coated with stiffening mud. So Bloom turns up in an Oxford suit, which he never had, and often the clothes are described. And I always wish that somebody with the skill and the knowledge would draw these things. And I'm quite sure none of these things would match. They would be a quite strange kind of, you don't have an alpine hat and vest slips, an Oxford suit, and see that when you're Harriers has to do with hunting. Rudolf once, mad head to foot, cut your hand open, lockjaw. So obviously Bloom once came home dirty, cut his hand open. Lockjaw is when your jaw is stiff. They make you kaput, Leopold Leben. So you can hear some Yiddish here. You watch them, chaps. Bloom weakly, they challenged me to sprint. It was muddy, I slipped. So that's obviously a memory of Bloom when he was young. Rudolf, with contempt, goyim natchez. And I think that's that kind of thing a goyim would do. Mm-hmm. Nice, spectacles for your poor mother. Spectacles doesn't mean glasses, I believe. It means nice, schöne Spektakel for her mother. So I think it's a bit of German. By the way, if it is German, and a lot of it is, just imagine how you can render this in English when it's English word. Nice spectacles for your poor mother, Mama. And then you can see that Bloom's mother turns up. We stop here now, that's quite enough. And you can see here, it's like a dream, all kinds of figures, when you think of them, turn up. Bloom's father is not his mother, they're all not there. So there's a lot of fantasy, of imagery. So that is how the chapter is very strange, and you never know what happens. And often again, one doesn't quite understand it. And it's a very, very long chapter too. Yeah. But I hope that you get something out of it. It's again another extreme in the book. Okay, we stop with Bloom's mother coming. Thank you.
Thanks, Ritz.
Thank you.
Have a nice evening. Bye.
Have a good week.
You too. Thank you.